Okay, for those of you guys on the recording, I'm sorry, I forgot to start it, so we're like 10 minutes in. We're on the book of Numbers, and, we're on Numbers. Okay, so chapter 13 and 14, they sent out 12 spies, one from each tribe, and they get to the promised land, and what did they find?
Giants.
Yep, they found giants.
Honey.
Yeah, they found honey and food.
Grass, probably.
They probably did find grass, I'm sure.
Dirt, maybe.
Probably some dirt. Okay, so, they came back, and the two spies, which Jackson already told us, was Joshua and Caleb. They came back, and they said what?
It's good.
It's good, and we can take them, right? And the other 10 said, no, we can't. There's giants. They live in big, tall, walled cities. We can't take them. They're too strong. And so the nation of Israel decided as a group to do what?
Not go.
To not go, right? They decided, we'll listen to what the 10 say. We don't want to go fight the giants and cause them to have to wander for 40 years. Until all of those people who were alive at that time that were adults died. And then once they all died and the next generation raised up, that generation is the one that ultimately went into the promised land. Yes, Oliver.
I know the reason that they stayed for 40 years. It was to let all the people who lived in the time period when they refused to go die.
Yes.
And let the next generation grow. Do I get candy?
No. Okay. But there's more candy bar bonus questions, so don't give up. Chapter 16 and 17, Korah's rebellion. Some are prideful and do not submit to authority. So chapter 16 deals with a guy named Korah. They rose up against Moses, and they didn't like his leadership, and they tried to overthrow him. It did not work. And the story, at the end of the story, the earth literally opened up and, like, swallowed Korah and his family and the other people that were trying to overthrow Moses. It's kind of a crazy story. But that happened. And then chapter 20, Moses strikes the rock. The servant of the Lord should not give water to those in need while in a state of anger or frustration. We're going to look at that more on Wednesday night, so I'm not going to go into too much detail on that. Chapter 21, this is where I want you to turn. Turn your Bibles to chapter 21. How many of you guys know the story of these fiery serpents? Yeah, Tristan does? You never heard of it? Okay, perfect. It's a really cool story. It's short. That's not why it's cool, but it's a cool story. So we talked about murmuring in chapter 11 and how our murmuring is against God, no matter how big or how small. The nation of Israel murmured a lot. What does murmur mean?
Complaining.
Yeah. So they complained a lot. And a lot of times if you read through Leviticus and Numbers, they get somewhere and they go to Moses and they're like, why did you bring us out in the wilderness to die? You should have just left us in Egypt. At least in Egypt, even though we were in bondage, at least we had food, at least we had water, right? And they're complaining about these things. And then God's like, hey, Moses, go put your rod in the water. And this, because there was some water at this one place that was bitter. So he puts his rod in there and the water turns good, so they can drink it. And then they complain about food. They're like, there's no food out here in the desert. And God starts raining down manna from heaven, right? And every time they complain, God's like, I got you. You know, I just give me a second, you know. Well, I'll rain down food from heaven. I'll come up with water. The water that talks about in chapter 20, Moses hits a rock and water for the entire, like, million people or however many people are there, flows out of this rock, right? Water, it's enough water for all of them. And so God can provide, like, no matter what, even when they don't think so. But even despite seeing God do it time after time after time, they continue to murmur all the time. And they want to complain that they want to go back to Egypt, even though they were slaves in Egypt. But at least they feel like they had food and water, and it was better than what it was like in the wilderness. And so they're constantly complaining. So in Numbers 21, verse 5, it says, and the people spake against God and against Moses, wherefore have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no bread, neither is there any water. And our soul loatheth this light bread, the manna. And the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and much people of Israel died. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, "We have sinned, and for we have spoken against..." God bless you. "For we have spoken against the Lord and against thee. Pray unto the Lord that he take away the serpents from us." And Moses prayed for the people. And the Lord said unto Moses, "Make thee a fiery serpent, and set it upon a pole. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is bitten, when he looketh upon it, shall live." And Moses made a serpent of brass, and put it upon a pole. And it came to pass that if a serpent had bitten any man, when he beheld the serpent of brass, he lived. Okay, so...
What does
he
hold it?
What?
Does he mean to hold it?
Beheld.
What are you asking me?
What does beheld mean?
Oh, beheld was like to see it. Like anybody that, like, behold, like anybody that could look at it, would be saved from it, from the bite. So they're complaining again. They're like, "We don't have food, we don't have water, we don't have bread. We have manna, but we don't want to eat that anymore. We've been eating that for a long time. We want something different." Right? And so God's like, "Fine, I'm kind of fed up with you." He sends snakes, like fiery snakes, into their camp, and they just go around biting people, and people start dying. And so then they come to Moses, and they're like, "We're sorry, we sinned against you, we complained against God, we shouldn't have done that. Please help us. These snakes are everywhere, they're killing everybody. Please pray to God that he can fix this and take these snakes away." Yes, Allie?
Isn't that what the symbol of the snakes?
Yes. Yes, so on like ambulances, some hospitals, a lot of veterinarian places, yeah, have the, like, the staff with the serpent wrapped around it. Comes from this, yeah. And so, yeah, so Moses prays and God says, "Okay, make a serpent, a brass serpent, put it on a pole, put it in the middle of the camp, and if you get bit, all you gotta do is go out of your tent and look at this brass serpent on a pole and you'll be healed, okay?" Well, God told them to make it, for one. They weren't worshiping it, for two. It was a picture, which we're about to look at, of Jesus Christ. How is it a picture of Jesus Christ?
Only if it wasn't, I would be an idol for Jesus.
Yeah, kind of. What? Yes?
Jesus on the cross.
Yeah, so it's a picture. Jesus was lifted up, right, on a pole. Not a pole, but on a cross. Same kind of an idea, yep. How else was it a picture of Christ? Huh? Because it saved them, yeah. The only way to be healed from the bite of this fiery serpent was to look to the serpent on a pole, right?
I don't know, like, Satan's a serpent, whenever Adam was there.
Yeah.
Did God save him
from
the serpent?
Maybe. I might be able to go along with that. But it's more a picture of Jesus Christ. That is the...
They're saved from the fiery serpent, so it'll bite them.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yes. Okay, so that's pretty much it on that story. Chapters 22 through 25 deals with Balaam, the false prophet. The world can't curse you, but they will try to corrupt you. Beware of false teachers who dilute the gospel for profit. There's a story about that in the book of Acts as well, where they... they're trying to use this girl who's possessed for profit, and I think it's Peter, or maybe it's Paul, comes along and heals her, casts out her demon, and the people get upset because they're like, "Hey, that was our like source of revenue. You're taking this away from us." All right, 26 through 36, the march to Canaan. What is Canaan? Where is Canaan? Huh? I think somebody said it. What?
It
is the promised land, yes. Canaan is the promised land. That's how you spell it on the board. No more wandering. They are on the march to the east banks of the Jordan River. Chapter 26, the lesson for us is a recount of the new generation. The battle is never over. There is more to come. Chapter 27, Joshua is appointed as the new leader. The law, Moses, cannot take you to the promised land, but Jesus or Joshua can. So what does that mean? So they have been wandering for 40 years at this point almost, right? They're getting close to getting into the promised land. Moses is not allowed to go into the promised land because of some sin that he did in chapter 20, which we'll look at on Wednesday night. But Moses was a picture of the law, right? He was the lawgiver. He was the one who went up on the mountain. He got the law from God. He brought it back down and laid it out for the people, right? He gave them the Ten Commandments. He told them all the law. Like, these are the things you have to do, right? That's what the book of Exodus, Numbers, or Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers are all dealing with that. And then Deuteronomy, he repeats the whole law to them in the book of Deuteronomy. And so he gives them the law again in the next book. But Moses, the law, he's a picture of the law. The law cannot save us, right? To enter into the promised land, to get into heaven, we can't keep the law. Like, none of us is able to keep the law. Only Jesus was. And so this is a picture of the transition from Moses to Joshua. Joshua, his name, in Hebrew is Yeshua, which is the same name as Jesus. And so Joshua is a picture and a type of Jesus.
I thought Jesus
was Jesus. Well, that's in Spanish, it's Jesus, but in Hebrew, it's Yeshua. And it's, which is the same as Joshua. And so, so Joshua is a picture of Jesus Christ, not just because of his name, but because of all the things he does in his life. There's a lot of pictures and types. We looked at some of that when we went through the book of Joshua over the last several months. But Joshua is the one who ends up leading them into the promised land, and because Moses' sin of striking the rock when he was supposed to speak to the rock, and God says, okay, because of that, I can't let you enter into the promised land, which was a pretty harsh punishment. But Moses is not going to be the one to lead them in. So they transition over to Joshua, and in the book of Deuteronomy, like I said, Moses re-gives the law just before they enter into the promised land, which we'll look at next week. Chapter 32, Reuben, Gad, half of Manasseh, settle on the east side of Jordan. So we talked about this when we were doing the book of Joshua as well. Hi. That's okay. They're ready for you. She told me she had to leave at 9:55 for a family picture. So chapter 32, we talked about this when we were talking about the book of Joshua. How 2.5 of the tribes said, we don't even want to go in the promised land. The land on this side of the Jordan River, we'll just stay here. This land is great. There's enough of it for all of us. Like, we're happy with this land on this side of the Jordan River. And so Moses makes a deal with them. He says, okay, you can stay on this side of the Jordan River, and this can be your inheritance, but you still have to send your men to fight, and you got to stay in the promised land and fight all the battles. And then once everything's done, then you guys can come back, and this you can settle in this land, and you guys just won't be part of the inheritance in the promised land. And they're like, okay, we're good with that. And we talked about it then, we're talking about it again now, that was not a good decision. Like, they got all the way to the edge of the promised land, and they decided to settle for something that was good, but wasn't the best, wasn't what God had for them. Yes, Allie?
If they already had fought all the battles, why wouldn't they just go ahead and stay in there anyway? They're already doing the hard part.
They were comfortable on the side of the...
Yeah, but they're going to go back?
Yeah.
That land was good for cattle.
That's what they...
That's
what they did. They settled for the good and didn't go for the best that God had for them. Alright, and then chapters 33 to 36, pep rally and final preparations for entering the land, the borders and the cities of refuge. We all need borders to maintain order and discipline. Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28. Let's read that. I don't know what that one says. Turn to Proverbs 25. You don't have a Bible this whole time?
I don't have one. I don't know everybody.
Did you raise your hand? No? I swear I saw a hand raise. 25:28. Can you call him out like that? Alright, 25:28 says, He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls. And so these cities of refuge was a place that somebody, if they were running from, one of the examples that it gives is like if you accidentally killed someone and their family was able to like get revenge on you basically, but you could go to the city of refuge, you had to stay there for so many years, and then you would be safe and you could go back home. So it was a place to go to like basically protect yourself from people who wanted to kill you, justly wanted to kill you. And that's what the cities of refuge were. Candy bar bonus question. Back in Genesis 15, you guys have been waiting for this one.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Abraham.
I feel like I need to give a more difficult question. What do you think it is?
Abraham.
What do you think it is? What do you think it is?
Abram.
What do you think it is?
It's Abram.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, I don't have enough candy for all of you guys, so.
My hand was up first.
Tristan's hand was up first. Tristan, what do you want? I don't have any more crunch bars. All right. Some major types or he had it. Yeah. Well, it's, I would have accepted either one. He had his hand up first. Tristan had his hand up right as I started reading the question. All right. Some major types or similitudes in the book of Numbers. The wilderness is a type of times of testing or trials in our life. God can use them to reach us. Cities of refuge is a type of Jesus is always near. He is our place of refuge. Giants, those are a picture, a type of the fears and obstacles and problems that we face every day. Trumpets, type of the voice of God that we should always be listening for. The rock that was smitten is a picture of Jesus Christ that was smitten for us. You guys know what smitten is?
Hit,
yeah.
Sliced apart.
No, not sliced apart.
Wait, what is that?
I mean, I don't think.
No, that's smite.
I mean, smite. The past tense of smite is smitten. But I don't think. I don't think sliced apart
is. What is sliced? It's one of those like.
Sliced.
I don't know.
It's one of those like smite. Or
I don't know what you're going for. I don't know. I mean, smite means to like hit or strike or. Sometimes it means kill, but I don't know if that means like sliced apart. But I mean, I guess that's a way to, that's one way to kill, but I don't know. That's a stretch, I think. The mixed multitude. We talked about this last week or the week before about how some of the Egyptians came with them, right? And they joined up with them. They saw your God is more powerful than our gods. We want to be with you guys. And so they left Egypt with them. And so that's the mixed multitude. So some Israelites and some non-Israelites. It's a picture or type of the curious people attending church who have not made a commitment yet. So we have that in this church. We have visitors pretty regularly, maybe that aren't saved or are trying to decide if they're going to follow the Lord or not. So that's a picture of that. The brazen serpent, we just talked about this. He's a picture or type of the Lord Jesus Christ lifted up on the cross. Those who look to him will live. Let's read that verse, actually. John 3:14. Flip on over there.
Smitten also means to be strongly attracted to someone or something.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're smitten. That's true. I wonder why they have that definition. I mean, I wonder, I guess I knew that, but it's like opposite definitions.
Yeah, right.
I'm either falling in love with you or I'm murdering you. Yeah, strike a firm blow. What'd you say? John 3:14. It's on your handout. Yeah.
John 3:14. Turn, girl.
John 3:14. It's like a broken record. What is it? Say it again, huh? Where are we turning? If only we had notes that told us where to turn.
John 3:14.
Put your phone away, Lucas. Lucas, put your phone away. I was talking to Lucas, not you. All right, John 3:14. Somebody read that.
And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so much, the Son of Man will be lifted up.
Okay. So a lot of times whenever we're talking about pictures and types, the Bible will define it for you. In this case, it does. Not always, but a lot of times it does. Some truths taught in Numbers. Let all things be done decently and in order. How many of you guys have heard Pastor Brian say that before? Let all things be done decently in order. Decently and in order. I feel like he says that, not weekly, but it's pretty regularly. Monthly, probably. It's that and, take the next right step. That's his other thing that he says a lot right now.
Love God, love people.
What?
Or
If you're not saved today,
come up
and raise your hand. He says that every Sunday.
He does. He should. There's people that need to hear that. Okay. Yeah, and God's a God of order as well, so. Shh. All right, we reap what we sow. What does that mean? Yes, reaping and sowing is like a farming term, right? Like whatever you sow, like whatever seed you put out in the ground, that's what's going
to
grow. Yeah.
You
put corn in the ground, it's probably not going to grow wheat or beans. It's going to grow corn. Yeah. The law of the boomerang. Okay, I like that.
Law of the garden.
Law of the garden. Okay. Quiet. Number three. We suffer when we go by sight instead of faith. Okay. We don't need to always know exactly what God has next for us, right? When you walk in faith, and God will reveal it. As we are faithful, God will reveal whatever the next thing that He wants for us to do is. I've told you guys the story before in here about K.O. Horvath, and he told a story on one of his podcasts about how he knew what was next, right? For whenever they're in Hungary now, and you know, he's like, I was at a point where I didn't know what we were supposed to do next. Is it time for us to start a church? Do we go get a building? Do we just keep meeting in our house? Like, you know, do we wait till we have a certain number of people? Like, how do we know when the next right thing is? And the thing he said that kind of stuck with me is just, he said that he realized he needs to just keep doing what he knows he's supposed to be doing, and then God will reveal whatever the next thing is when it's time. So, if you don't know what to do, keep doing what you know you're supposed to be doing, and God will reveal it as you're faithful. Number four, respect the chain of command. Don't try to overthrow or circumvent leaders in the church. So that was what was dealing with the chapter 16 and 17. They were dealing with Korah, and they were trying to overthrow Moses. They were saying, Moses, you're not fit to be the leader. And so they said, let's let God choose who the leader is going to be. He had already chosen who was going to be the leader. But they said, let's let God choose who He wants to be the leader. And, of course, God chose Moses, and the earth opened up and swallowed up Korah and his band of rebels. Yeah, ragtag group of misfits. So, yeah, don't try to overthrow or circumvent leaders in the church. Number five. Shh, ladies. Number five. God can use unsaved men to preach the gospel. Number six. God stands up for His people before their enemies, even while He is punishing them. So they're going through some consequences, but when the enemy comes, God's still like, oh, these are still my people. Like, I'm dealing with some stuff with them right now, but I'm not going to let people come in and overthrow them. Number seven, the judgments of God against disobedience are strong. That is what we're dealing with Moses in chapter 20, which we'll look at on Wednesday. Cameron, shh. But Moses kind of makes one seemingly small mistake in the scope of all the things that Moses had to deal with the nation of Israel. He makes a pretty small mistake, it seems like. And God says immediately, like, okay, because you did that, you can't go into the promised land. And it's like, man, that is a heavy consequence for what seemed like kind of a small infraction. But we've talked about this a lot. God takes, you know, His word seriously. He takes these pictures and these types seriously. And what Moses did was an infraction against that. And so God's judgment was pretty harsh, but it was just. Okay, so how does this help me on Monday morning? Life is full of journeys. Sometimes we're on the mountain with God. Sometimes we feel like we are in the wilderness. Be encouraged that God has not left you. He loves you, and He knows where you are. He can lead you to a better place. We must serve and obey Him daily and always be ready to follow His leading. So God will not leave us or forsake us, the Bible says. And so even when we feel like maybe things aren't going exactly how we want them to or the way we think that they should be going, that doesn't mean that God's not with us. It just means, I mean, it could mean a number of things. It could mean, you know, it's a time of trial and testing to see if we can continue to be faithful even when things are difficult. It could be something that we're in sin and God's trying to redirect us back to Him, which we talked about during VBS. You know, God can use things in our life to bring us back to Him if we're dealing with some stuff. And so, it could be any number of things, but God's not going to leave us or forsake us. Deuteronomy challenge. What three things are the kings of Israel not to multiply while in office? If you're reading along with us, and you come up with that answer, I will give you a candy bar next week. You have to, next week. You gotta read it.
Wait, can't we just Google it over the week?
Yeah. What?
Can't we just Google it over the week?
No. Read it.
I mean, like, what I mean by Google is, like, you go into your electric Bible, and then you search
the... Your electric Bible?
Well, it's your phone, but it's a Bible app.
Why don't you just read the book of Deuteronomy and see what you come up with? See what God might reveal to you. And the question at the bottom, what three things are the kings of Israel not to multiply while in office? It's like a candy bar bonus question, but it's a week ahead of time. So you gotta like read the Bible and stuff.
Right, it's called that. It doesn't say candy bar, it says candy.
What does it say?
Of any size.
Does it say candy?
No, it just says Deuteronomy challenge.
Yeah, Deuteronomy challenge.
The bar is quite yet. 34 kids. 33 kids.
So
there's
34 chapters of Deuteronomy, so that's like almost 5 chapters a day, which is a lot, but...
That would take me like 34 days.
But listen...
Play it, just play it on, if you have an audio, if you have an electronic Bible.
And follow along in the Bible at the same time. That way you're hearing it and reading it and
yeah.
You're not
slowing
down.
See, we made the same mistake. I said electronic Bible.
You said electric Bible. It's an electronic Bible.
Well, you could have an electronic Bible.
The app on your phone is an electronic Bible. It's not an electric Bible. That would shock you. Although the Bible is shocking, so maybe. It just kind of came to me. Okay, if you have your notebooks, you can leave it right in here.
Hey, does anybody not have their name on the spine of their notebook now?
Hello, Oliver. You don't have a notebook at all? Have you had one this whole time? So stand it up. Yes, I have a Sharpie. Wow, Cameron, great job. Taking care of everybody's Bible or notebooks here. Elias. I'll get you a sticker. You need to write your name on the spine of that.